Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Adam Griffith from the Crappie Chronicles crew on the show this time. I've had Adam on before. We got to know him a little bit. We learned that, you know, he's from that southern Minnesota around the Twin Cities area. He fishes the metro a lot. He's a fishing guide, and so definitely a guy to pay attention to if you're going to do any fishing or looking for a guided fishing trip around the metro, summer or winter. In the winter, like I said, he's part of the Crappie Chronicles crew. Adam is just a panfish guru all around, and the Crappie Chronicles recently put out their first episode of season 5, and just filming from earlier this year, just a couple of weeks ago, I would say. And it's just a really great video. Go over to YouTube to Adam Bartusik's YouTube channel to watch it. I believe the YouTube channel goes by the name Bart. But that being said, in the episode, Adam catches a handful of just absolute giant crappies. And again, it's just a continuation of a lot of their content, and there's a lot to learn from it. But I wanted to have Adam on. As soon as I got done watching that episode, I reached out to Adam to have him on to kind of talk about it, maybe do a little bit of a deeper dive into some of the information that they put on display in this video and other videos of just some of the things that these guys are implementing in their strategy to be successful, not just, you know, finding and targeting really giant, like trophy quality crappies, which is what they do. But on early ice is a whole monster of itself. To be out on thin ice with no snow cover, you know, the ultimate in stealth, the ultimate stealth approach, if you will, just to get close to any crappies, not just big old ones that have been around the block, but just to get close to any fish. This isn't even, you know, early ice is a whole conversation regardless of what species you're after. You know, if you're after fish that are in 30 feet or less, like walking on top of them, as we're learning with forward sonar, can be really, really tough. And so what are some of the things to be thinking about to try to be successful in this scenario? And Adam, I mean, these guys put it together on this recent video, and so we're going to talk about it, you know, talking about bite windows, talking about presentation selection and cadences, and you know, and just kind of trying to be a little bit of a minimalist on the ice where you're not being super noisy when you're going around, but obviously you got to make some noise. So what do you do to try to be on top of these fish, or get these fish to be, you know, willing to at least just be under you, close enough to see the lure for one thing. And then, you know, some of the gear setups, targeting bigger fish. Again, this is a crappie conversation, but I think if you're a walleye guy or bluegill or anything, you know, paying attention to your rod and line, your reel and drag setup, you know, the presentation, you know, getting bites and getting hooks into a fish's mouth if they're not super bitey is one thing, but also paying attention to your setup as far as fighting a fish and being prepared, you know, to you know, land a fish, especially when you're talking about big fish and just how they fight. So that's all part of this conversation, and there's a lot to take away from it. Adam is just a stud on the ice, and he's fun to talk to, so lucky enough to have him on for the second time. So let's get to it. We've got Adam Griffith. We're talking giant crappies in the metro. Let's do it. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers from Flop Industries. The Flopbox 10 and Flopbox 20 are heavy-duty roto-molded bait coolers, fully insulated, which comes into play both summer and winter. The aeration system for minnows and other live bait is fully enclosed and lithium-powered for reliability and durability. The stainless hardware, the removable chill plate, the list goes on of features, but these high-end bait coolers can easily enhance your fishing experience when you consider their ability to keep your bait alive, fresh, and ready to go when you need it. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers and more at flopindustries.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations, and to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. For anybody that likes to enjoy the outdoor opportunities here in the state of North Dakota, I would recommend the North Dakota Outdoors Podcast, put together by the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. This podcast playlist features a variety of entertaining topics, but for anglers specifically, you're going to find episodes that feature biologists and other fisheries department employees that are going to highlight and detail the great fishing opportunities across the state. They also tackle all the hot seasonal topics and feature data and research. So if you're looking for another great source of information about the outdoor opportunities here in the state of North Dakota, check out the North Dakota Outdoor Podcast put together by the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. A link to check it out is in the description. Preparing for the upcoming ice fishing season means making great gear choices that will help you maximize your time on the water. That's where Summit Fishing Equipment comes in. The trusted choice for anglers who demand reliable, affordable, and top-quality forward-facing sonar gear and accessories for all the major brands, including Garmin LiveScope, Lowrance Active Target, and Hummingbird Mega Live. Check out their bestseller, the Summit HD CNC Shuttle. It's designed to protect your expensive electronics from harsh winter conditions while keeping everything portable for easy transport. You could pair that up with the lightweight yet robust carbon fiber ice transducer pole and the versatile Summit bag to complete the setup. Crafted from advanced carbon fiber, this forward sonar pole is not only incredibly strong, but also the lightest on the market. Their offerings don't stop at just poles and shuttles. Summit Fishing Equipment offers a full range of bags, mounts, and accessories to customize your fishing rig to your exact specifications. So whether you're a seasoned pro or just getting started, Summit has what you need to improve your experience on the ice. Explore Summit's collection at summitfishingequipment.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Summit Fishing Equipment is also on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You know, as a wrecking crew that so many of us relate to, right? Like whenever we go fishing, we go with our buddies, you know, whether it's a destination fishery or whatever, you go with your buddies, you have your little network, and you guys kind of showcase that. You showcase what a, you know, a crew of hardcore guys can accomplish when you work together and you go and you guys just have fishy conversations with each other. You're learning from each other. You're working off of each other. And it's just fun to see you guys, you know, sort of assume your roles and positions on the ice and just kind of what the Crappie Chronicles really kind of showcases. But this year's a little different. Adam's been launching some episodes, some stuff that you guys had filmed like last year a little bit. Yep. But you guys just, and you guys, great stuff. And you guys just, but you guys did just recently launch the first episode. I finally got a chance to watch it. And I immediately, yep, like as soon as I got done, as soon as like the credits rolled, I like texted you and I was like, dude, what do I got to do to have you on? I want to talk about this. And so we're ahead of the game. But that being said, I do want to kind of start this off with a little bit of the backstory that you guys have already started to tell. And hopefully when people are done listening to this, they'll head over and start watching, you know, watch that episode and get hyped for the season coming up. But I do want to kind of talk about it here, where a little bit of the backstory of what sort of happened in that first episode and what seems like it might be brewing for you guys at the Crappie Chronicles. What you guys do, you're targeting big fish in across the Midwest, but you guys down there by the cities, you got something special going on down there, it seems like. And that first episode was pretty unreal. I got questions about it specifically, but the backstory, what seems like is going on down there that is setting it up to where this year might be special? Go ahead.
I mean, it's just like the last few winters of being, you know, not the best ice conditions, having a lot of snow, having a ton of ice where people just didn't want to drill through all that. I mean, it's been 3 years basically here of, you know, 50% of the actual ice fishermen are actually making it out. And I think probably last year, maybe 25% of the actual overall population of ice fishermen made it out. And it just kind of gave these fish a break. And these special lakes that have these certain fish in it, and all lakes have really popped off. It's not just these lakes that have the giants, but there's lakes that have really good, you know, they'll grow up to 14 inches. These lakes are also popping off. It's just the fact that they've gotten left alone. They've gotten to do what they want to do, grow. And, it's just, they finally were able to get to where they're at now without really being pressured the last couple of years. And it just set up for a perfect storm. and we're taking advantage of it. And the thing about us being on the ice so much is we've literally watched these fish grow for the last 3 to 5 years now. And so it's been cool to watch them go from like 13 to 14 inches and then just follow their growth pattern all the way up to now, 3 to 5 years later, they're 16 to 19 inch long fish. So pretty cool little history of events there that's kind of led up to what it is now. And I think people are going to see that. I mean, you're going to see bigger fish caught. You're going to see more numbers of your eater size, your 11, 12 inchers. It's just set up for those fish being able to get to that size. And I think it should open people's eyes to what pressure really does to a lake and what it does to fish populations and their size. And, we need to be more cognitive of what we're doing out there. You know, yeah, it's great to go show your buddy the fish, but just take a picture. Cameras and everything are so good now. Get the measurements, get a replica, let her go, and let the next guy catch her when she's a little bit bigger.
Yeah, there's so much optimism. And it's really multifaceted, right? And that was one thing that I wanted to point out is, like, you know, even for individuals that don't necessarily relate to the, you know, the grind of like finding giant fish, the optimism's for everybody, because it's like whatever body of water you're on, this year is setting up to be a good ice season. And we're already, I mean, it's Christmas as we're talking right now, and it's like people are on good ice in places that haven't been really well fishable for a couple of years. So even if it's just eaters, even if it's just taking your kids out and fishing old memories and waypoints and, you know, that you haven't been to for a couple of years, like everything is optimistic right now that it's just going to be ratcheted up a notch. Right.
Exactly. So
I did want to point that out that this year just could be cool for a lot of reasons. But that optimism is like universal right now that everybody can get excited about. But you guys, you know, and I've talked at this in the past too, that like you guys have kind of showcased, you know, that area down there around the Twin Cities just sort of has, there's sort of a magical little belt there where there's really, really big fish. Now there can be big fish caught in a lot of different places, and you guys have traveled and showcased some really cool bites, but you guys do kind of sit in and around where there's probably, you know, more targetable, like fishable populations of like those plus size fish. Right. And so that has been kind of interesting. We've talked about that there, you know, I could probably have, you know, a biologist could probably explain it a little bit better, but you know, whatever it is right there with that, you know, on that, lat long, that sort of meets up right there, there's just more bigger fish. And so interestingly, you guys have showcased that, but we're sitting on early ice. And I want to move into this first episode that just recently aired, because you and Adam were out and working together and caught some giants. And, you know, some people might look at that. You almost made it look easier than I feel like this is what I want to talk about, is like you guys made it look like you can do it. But there's a lot that goes into that. There's some elements to early ice fishing, you know, and not just crappie specific, but there's some elements to early ice fishing that are kind of tricky and nuancey. And so I'm kind of curious how that went for you, and kind of walk me through sort of the, you know, what you guys thought you were going to maybe run into, what you thought maybe the full potential was of that, of going out fishing that day. Like, because fishing on early ice, for a lot of different reasons, doesn't always go really well. Fish are spooky and whatever. So I was kind of hoping you'd maybe walk me through sort of like the planning of that, of like, where did you guys think that was going to go?
To be honest, we've never really fished that lake that early in the year. And we were just kind of like, well, let's swing for the fence and go see. Cause like me and Bart left them there last year, late season. And we're like, well, let's just go back and see if we can just start the train right off where we left her. And went out there, and I got there a little bit before Bart, and I started looking around, and I was seeing singles, maybe a three pack at the most. And they were just kind of all over and very spooky. We don't wear cleats. None of that stuff. We try to sneak up on them. I mean, you're walking as light as you can, and they still hear you or sense you or whatever they're doing. See you. I mean, we didn't have snow at that time. So, and a lot of our bodies of water this year are super clear. So there's a lot of factors working against us, but, Bart got there. We kind of looked around. We kind of knew that, hey, they're spread out, but we knew there was a certain time of the day based off what we learned over filming over so many years. We're like, okay, this is going to be the hour or 2 hour period where they group themselves up and they start to bite. They're going to get attainable. You're going to be able to walk above them, drill in front of them, and let them swim under you instead of you just being behind them the whole time as they swim away. So that period of time happened. The area where we found all the singles, we went back there and they were all gone. And we go, okay, we kind of put two and two together. We said, we got to find the school. We went out, we found the school. We actually found two of them. There was probably a total of around 60 fish total, all big ones. They had grouped up into two pods. We've started fishing one, and that's the film. We literally caught all those fish out of one school. And we just moved with them. They become attainable at a certain time. Like, I'm not going to say exactly what it is just because it took us a long time to figure it out. But there's a window that we figured out that these larger fish, for some reason, it makes them like group up or get aggressive, and they just, they become, you're able to catch them. But you really got to be cadence aware. These fish are super, you know, they sit there and watch your bait for a long time before they bite it. And I feel like if you change your cadence at all while you're fishing, or while you're down there and that fish is staring at your bait, the cover's blown and they'll just pull off and swim away.
Yeah.
There's a lot that goes into it, but yeah, there's a little thing we figured out that kind of, they group up and they'll actually become attainable, but it's not every lake. I mean, we had a lot of lakes where the fish, you know, we even get close to them and they swam away, you know, it was just, but at certain times of the day, those fish just don't care. And, that's when you got to strike.
You know, I can totally appreciate, you know, you guys have definitely got some things dialed in. But there's definitely a big takeaway there regardless that the bite windows are, they matter.
Oh, absolutely.
Of like, yep. even if you know, a lot of people maybe can't even necessarily decide when they're going to be out. Like, it's like, I know I'm only going to have Saturday. It's going to be in the morning and I'm going to be fishing for 4 hours. But you know, and even if you don't know exactly when that's going to happen, you just kind of got to fish with confidence that, you know, this time of year under these conditions, you know, being stealthy matters. You know, I think that is such a early ice piece, right? And it matters all the time, but it's like in early ice, sometimes it's like, you can't be stealthy enough. Like, you know, and even right. if you're worried about dragging sleds around, or if you've got a big group of people, like often enough, it's like, you know, just feel a little bit confident in where you're at and drill your holes and maybe just sit and be quiet and hope for the best can be your best. You know, that can be the best thing. We talk about running and gunning all the time. And you guys have kind of reduced yourselves to be minimalist, to be stealthy like that. Maybe not everybody's like that, but it's like, you know, just kind of got to learn from it and take things away from it that like that stealth matters so much, but that bite window makes them a little bit more durable. And if that's going to happen on your body of water, that can just be a key piece of information that just fish confidently. You got 4 hours to fish. Even if the first 3 hours are really, really tough, it could all happen in the last hour.
Right.
As you got out there, you kind of, you're swinging for the fences, you know, it's like, you didn't know that this was for sure going to go, and you could have easily gone out there. And I can see in the background of your footage, there's like other people fishing out there too. And it's like, man, like, you know, you guys could have went out there and easily busted, but you didn't. And I think that is so cool. But like you said, the cadences. So now you're aware that you're fishing towards a window.
Yeah.
And you're familiar with the body of water enough to know the size structure is what you guys are looking for. Big fish.
Yeah. We knew it was them by looking at them on live. Like, we could tell there was a lot of 15 to 16 inches. And then there was a couple, I think there was like three or four in that school that were that upper echelon, you know, 17 to 19 inch fish. And we could see them in there. We just knew that we just have to weed through them until we got one of those big ones to finally commit. And I actually had two of them do it. I had another one bite it, but I just lipped him. I had him on for maybe two cranks of the reel and it popped off. And it was another really big one. I could tell by the mark that came in, but yeah, it was literally, you're just fishing through that school trying to get to the few big ones that are there. And
yeah, I'm curious about your arsenal. I'm curious about the catching. So, you know, you're familiar, you know, there's big ones out there. That's what brings you to that body of water. You got a pretty decent understanding that you're fishing towards a bite window. You're going through the day, you're seeing the singles, the little wolf packs, things start happening. They start moving towards where they're going to group up. They're going to feed. And that makes them a little more durable. You can drill a little bit closer to them. You see it start to happen. But even then, you got to catch them. Now, this is the great equalizer. This is the great equalizer where forward sonar, a lot of people can use forward sonar and even get relatively proficient at it and helping them find fish. But then we're still talking early ice, spooky fish that, you know, even though we're in this window where they're letting you drill around them, it doesn't mean they don't still know you're there. So now you're still trying to get a fish that feels, you know, some level of pressure. You know, it's not like you're invisible up there. You're casting shadows and everything. Like, walk me through that for you, man. What are some of the things? What are some of the hot tips with your setup, your lure selection, maybe sort of your progression with lure selection and setup? Like, are you really confident in a certain types of setups? And if so, kind of what is it that got you to that point? I mean, I'm just sort of curious with your arsenal for the day.
You know, I used to, when I started fishing, I'd always start small. You know, I'd start with a small jig, plastic, a smaller pinhead or a smaller spoon. And over filming now for the last 5 years, we kind of all learned that we just start big and aggressive, because it's like, if we can get them to bite those bigger baits, they got bigger hooks, better hookup ratio, better land percentage. And so we've kind of started that now. Like, if you watch in the video, we both started big. Like, we both had 1/8 ounce pinheads on. You know, both of us were throwing the flutter fry down there, bigger plastic. Just trying to be aggressive, get them to bite a bait with a bigger hook on it. And they wanted nothing to do with it. Like, they'd come look, and finally they just turn and swim away. And it was like, okay, if we're getting them to look, they're at least going to come that far. They'll bite something. What is it, you know? And me and Bart went back to our rod cases, and I was going through, and I'm like, I think they're going to bite the pinhead, because they were pretty, like, you know, they were interested in coming and looking at it. So what I did is I switched sizes. I went down to a 16th, and then I switched to a completely different color. So I had a dark one on, and I went to one that had, like, blue, pink, and white on it. So it was a little bit brighter of a color. And Bart switched to a little bit smaller plastic. I think he went to like a 4 mil and some plastics. And we went back, and immediately I dropped down on the school, and first drop I catch one. And I just looked at Bart and I go, I think we might've figured out it might be the pinhead size. And I caught another one and another one and another one. And then Bart was fishing a hole for probably 3 minutes, and he had a couple down there, and he's like, will you just come over here? He goes, that'll be the proof. And I dropped down there and, like, immediately catch, I don't know, like a 15 and a half. And then I caught a 16 and a half out of his hole. And he's just like, okay. And you can hear me in the video go, I think you should go put that pinhead on now.
That's how
we do it. You know, we used to start small and go big. And now it's like, let's just start aggressive. And if they bite that, it's so much more. Your hookup ratio and the aggressiveness of the fish is so much more that, it's just, you don't have to worry about really feeling a bite, because when they eat an 1/8 ounce pinhead, they slam the crap out of it, you know? So it's a lot different than when they eat an 1/8 or a 16th or a 32nd. They kind of, they'll inhale that thing, but a lot of times they just come up there and grab it. And that's what these things were doing. They weren't like inhaling the bait. Every one of them just came up there and just literally grabbed it with the end of their mouth. And the rod tip would just barely sink, and I'd set the hook on them, and it wasn't even really a bite. Like, you would just literally, the rod tip, you'd be jigging, and all of a sudden the rod would just sit there for a second longer than as you're jigging, you know? And it was like, oh, he's got it, because my rod didn't go back up. And that was the bite.
Preparing for the upcoming ice fishing season means making great gear choices that will help you maximize your time on the water. That's where Summit Fishing Equipment comes in. The trusted choice for anglers who demand reliable, affordable, and top-quality forward-facing sonar gear and accessories for all the major brands, including Garmin LiveScope, Lowrance Active Target, and Hummingbird Mega Live. Check out their bestseller, the Summit HD CNC Shuttle. It's designed to protect your expensive electronics from harsh winter conditions while keeping everything portable for easy transport. You could pair that up with the lightweight yet robust carbon fiber ice transducer pole and the versatile Summit bag to complete the setup. Crafted from advanced carbon fiber, this forward sonar pole is not only incredibly strong, but also the lightest on the market. Their offerings don't stop at just poles and shuttles. Summit Fishing Equipment offers a full range of bags, mounts, and accessories to customize your fishing rig to your exact specifications. So whether you're a seasoned pro or just getting started, Summit has what you need to improve your experience on the ice. Explore Summit's collection at summitfishingequipment.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Summit Fishing Equipment is also on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. For anybody that likes to enjoy the outdoor opportunities here in the state of North Dakota, I would recommend the North Dakota Outdoors Podcast, put together by the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. This podcast playlist features a variety of entertaining topics, but for anglers specifically, you're going to find episodes that feature biologists and other fisheries department employees that are going to highlight and detail the great fishing opportunities across the state. They also tackle all the hot seasonal topics and feature data and research. So if you're looking for another great source of information about the outdoor opportunities here in the state of North Dakota, check out the North Dakota Outdoors Podcast put together by the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. A link to check it out is in the description. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers from Flop Industries. The Flopbox 10 and Flopbox 20 are heavy-duty roto-molded bait coolers, fully insulated, which comes into play both summer and winter. The aeration system for minnows and other live bait is fully enclosed and lithium-powered for reliability and durability. The stainless hardware, the removable chill plate, the list goes on of features, but these high-end bait coolers can easily enhance your fishing experience when you consider their ability to keep your bait alive, fresh, and ready to go when you need it. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers and more at flopindustries.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. I'm curious about like how you would explain sort of the triggering qualities under that kind of a bite. What the triggering qualities are of a pinhead. You know, you guys are kind of committed to less live bait, as least live bait as possible.
We do not use live bait. I mean, we haven't used, we've done the thing where we drop the minnow down on the blade spoon, but that's like one bite out of, you know, hundreds that we've done. And that's just because it's just one specific lake they like it on. So, but yeah, I mean, you don't need live bait. I mean, It's cadence, figuring out the fish's mood, what is going to trigger that fish to bite, you know? And just once you figure it out, you just got to keep doing the same thing until they don't bite it anymore.
Yeah. But for you, like, how do you like to fish that that pinhead minnow? And I'm totally interested in the setup and just how your line and leader, maybe you're not like, I want to geek out on this part as much as possible. Cause I think these are the fun details that, yep. You know, whether they do or don't matter, they're just the fun details to talk about.
Yeah. So, I mean, the setup I had there, I had Waldo's Chronicle from our first year. So it was a 36 inch noodle blank. I had 4 pound test mono on there. I always use mono. I just like that little bit more stretch to it. And I was using, well, like I said, I had that 16th ounce pinhead on there. And what I was doing is, so when a crappie comes up, he always turns his body and is coming up at an angle. He's not swimming straight at your bait most of the time. Most of the time they're coming up from below it and they're looking kind of at an angle towards your bait. Well, what's so nice about the pinhead is it's thin. So when they look up at the pinhead, I feel like that bait almost disappears to them. Like they don't really see it, but then they got that blade down there and the cadence that I was doing, and I really only can do it with Waldo's rod with that noodle tip, is I just bounce the rod so ever so slightly. And what I'm doing is I'm not really moving the bait in the water. I'm just making that pinhead blade kick itself straight out to the side and then go back down. So like all I'm doing is literally pumping that blade, and that blade is literally going out and in, out and in. The bait itself is really not moving in the water because of that noodle tip. Like, even though I'm pumping the rod, but I'm only pumping it maybe a quarter to a half inch. And so the bait with that noodle rod, the rod is really moving, but the bait really isn't moving in the water because the rod is bending down and keeping the bait generally in that same strike zone. You know what I mean? And then only thing that is moving is that little blade. And so I think they just get so affixed on that blade, they don't even see the bait, and they just see that thing dancing there, and it looks like a little, I don't know, a little tiny baby minnow or some kind of bug that's kicking through the water, you know, and they just come up and they're like, oh, easy meal. And they just, whoop.
Yeah.
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 I mean, that's kind of what I think it is. And that's how I catch those fish. So, but I mean, different fish want it differently, you know, it's all just.
Yeah. Like the easy ones, it's like, we don't even have to spend a lot of time talking about the suicidal ones. Right. Because anybody can probably catch them doing whatever.
Right.
But it's these kind of conversations that I think are really valuable. And it's really, it's not always big fish oriented, even, you know, smaller fish, but crappies notoriously will spit baits, or they're just really good at like tasting, right. The lure from an inch away, you know, and it's like when they're like climbed right on top of you on your locator, you know, or your flasher, it's like they're, your bait and the fish are like one, you know, it's like you're waiting to set the hook at any time if you feel something. And it's like underwater footage, you know, for me anyways, has shown, it's like, man, sometimes they've kicked my bait. The tongue has touched my bait three times before I would have never known, right. You know? And yep. So it's really, truly amazing. But that seductive cadence, I think, matters. But I'm curious for you, like the mono thing, how serious are you with the mono? Does the mono for you give you comfort, like with how the rod and the lure kind of respond from like a jigging, yep. like a cadence relationship? Or is it more just for fighting fish, or what's your.
Well, it's kind of both. I just don't want it to be too stiff, really. You know, I just want that like little bit of play in there. So like if I accidentally like mess up my cadence a little bit, there's not so much of an obviousness, you know, to the fish, like, oh, I messed up. And with that mono, that it's got, you know, it's just kind of stretchy and does its thing. And I feel like fluorocarbon just has a little more, I don't know, it's a little stiffer and just more like responsiveness to what you do. Like it responds faster, I feel like, than mono does.
Yeah.
And then also on the fighting aspect, I feel like when you set the hook, and especially with these bigger fish, they do such giant head shakes, because if you ever watch them down there, they don't really swim around too much. I mean, they do, but like they'll get in an area and they'll just swing their body back and forth. And I mean, a 17 inch crappie, so that's a long ways to swing their body, you know, it's 30 some inches back and forth, you know. And you got to have a rod and then the line to be able to take up that head shake. I've watched a lot of people over the years break off on them big ones just because they're not ready for that head shake. And they go to drop their head down in the water and they don't drop their rod, and pink, just snaps it off. If you watch me, I always, with that noodle rod, I always just drop the rod every time they shake their head. It's just a good way of taking up that shock from their head shake.
Yeah.
I see a lot of people, they always just hold their rod still and just let the fish pull. And it's like, well, I just let the fish pull my rod. So if you ever see like the way I fight fish, I don't really like hold the rod tightly. Like I'm holding it, but I'm letting the fish kind of move the rod where he wants to move the rod. I'm not pulling against him. You know, I'm just kind of like, yeah, I got tension on him. But like if the fish goes, I just let the rod go with him. You know, yeah, you have a drag, but like, a crappie is not going to go too far. You know, typically if a fish takes off and breaks you off, it's not a crappie.
Yeah.
You know, usually they don't go super far when they do a run anyway.
Yeah. So, yeah. You just got to be able to absorb those head shakes. I think fighting a fish is a part of this conversation too. When you're talking big fish, I mean, I've had these conversations with, you know, musky anglers. I know you've caught a lot of muskies in your lifetime too, but like there's sort of an art to catching big fish or fighting big fish.
Right.
That's something too that I should probably spend more time on in these podcasts too. I think that's a technical piece of information when we're talking bigger fish of any species. But I feel like, you know, fighting a big musky boat side when it just ate on a figure eight, like there's something to that. Right. There's a lot of interesting nuances that you almost don't learn them very well until you have the experience and the heartache of like dumping them.
Right.
And I think you can go all the way right on down the line to big crappies below the ice on thin ice, fighting them, you know, below the hole where, you know, they're just, I mean, they're throwing, I mean, I'm watching that video of you landing. All those fish were big, but I mean, that 17 and a half incher, watching that thing through the ice, right? Cause like, you know, there's no snow. You see that fish fighting below the ice, like circling right. around you. It's like, you know, so your line is just inches away from your rod tip. And then it takes a hard line, you know, right at the bottom of the ice on, you know, going straight over, and that fish is, so I mean that line has multiple turns in it, and that fish is pinwheeling around that hole, and it's just throwing that huge mouth. Yeah, dude, I think that there's sort of an art to that, so I'm glad you kind of explained that, and those preferences. I think that stuff really does matter, you know, and that's what I like about your guys's content too, that, you know, even if you're not describing it, you just show it really well. You know, those camera angles, those GoPros that just show kind of how you handle each different rod. Cause I know that you wouldn't be able to do what you're describing with just any rod off the shelf. You know, that might be a little bit right. of a hot take. You know, I don't want to like right. overstate it. Like, you know, everybody needs to fish with like a $300 rod. That's probably not the case, but just be aware of your setup when yep. you are fighting exactly. a fish. And you are, and so I think that that's really, really cool. But yeah, dude, also that had to have been a little bit of an, I mean, you're not a super emotional guy, but that had to have been a little bit of an emotional fish catch. I mean, some handful of those fish would have been 99% of like avid crappie anglers PBs.
Right.
I don't even know this for sure. Is that your personal best ever?
No, it is not. No, I've caught quite a few, over 18. So
really?
Yeah. Actually on that same lake, I caught, I think I'm at 25 over 18 and 23 of them were caught on that lake.
Dude, that's insane.
Yeah. That lake used to be basically what it's coming back to be. It used to be like that and nobody fished it. So I kind of had it to myself.
Oh yeah. Understandable. So the genetics are there, but also too, that's kind of a piece to this. Now you mentioned something that I think is also very notable. I'm glad you guys included it, that, you know, when you're looking for the mega giants, and I think that, and this happens in a lot of places, I think if people were paying attention to it, but anywhere that white crappies and black crappies coexist and they have the opportunity to hybridize, that is sort of part of this too, where, you know, you guys are aware of these populations of fish where there are white crappie present. You guys have showcased that a little bit, that, you know, you understand that if you're looking for the biggest ones and you're trying to put an 18 incher on right. film, like I said, you kind of mentioned that. I'm curious, you know, maybe just kind of have you kind of deep dive into that just in your experience. If you've caught that many fish that were in and around that size, you know, how often are they a hybrid versus a pure strain white or black?
I would say probably I've seen a lot of big ones, like of other people that were fishing with me back then too. You know, like my dad got a 19 inch white.
Oh man.
I've seen one 19 inch black. And other than that, every one of them were hybrids.
Yeah. And that fish that you caught, that 17 and a half incher, was a hybrid. Now,
yep.
And after you had mentioned that in the episode, so I was paying attention to that myself, and you caught mm-hmm. that fish. Now that fish, you know, looked a heck of a lot like a pure black, you know, and if people haven't caught a lot of them, I would say, you know, that one looked a lot like a pure black, but it had the black, that ear tab.
Yep. And then if you look at it, you can see the like stripes are kind of like there, but they're not like dominant. You know what I mean? They're kind of like hidden in the actual like pattern. Like you can see the stripes are still there. You know, they're not like, they're just not prominent like they are just on a pure white crappie, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes this is true for me. sometimes it isn't until you go back and look at the pictures from the day that you realize you caught a hybrid.
Right.
Sometimes it's like almost like, you know, it's almost like you were too close to it and you were too fixated or made too many assumptions in your brain. You took the picture, maybe you released the fish, especially a big one. Hopefully you release the fish. And then it isn't until you're showing somebody the pictures later on that's like, oh, there's a little black ear tab on that fish. Or look at those bars. They're just ever so subtle, you know. But I don't know. I think maybe it doesn't really matter a whole lot, but it was, I think that that's a good and an interesting thing to sort of point out that, you know, you guys are aware of the bodies of water that you're on. And sometimes you guys fish lakes that don't have whites. And sometimes you do, and you don't always catch the hybrids. Sometimes you catch, you know, one or the other, but I'm kind of interested in, just sort of, you know, your favorite bodies of water for the big ones. Is that sort of across the board that you guys don't fish a whole lot of them anymore, unless it's got both fish in it?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, we just kind of figured out that, the chances of there being a true 18 inch white or an 18 inch black in a lake that doesn't have hybrids is pretty low. I mean, yes, it happens, but it's going to happen way more where those lakes are hybridized, because it's just like the hybrids just get bigger, and that happens in like other animals in the world too, where you know, two cross and then their baby gets bigger than both parents. I feel that's kind of like that's what happens with crappies as well, because we always see the hybrids are always built way different than the white or the black. Like, you'll catch them, and the whites will be long, and you know, they're usually slender fish. They're not super thick like a black crappie. Then you'll get a black crappie the same size, you know, and he'll be built, but then you get a hybrid, and it's just like the Arnold Schwarzenegger of crappie. You know, it looks like he's down there doing shoulder chugs all day, you know, just got a massive forehead, and they're just a different creature, you know. It's like you cross them and it's just like, I can gain an extra pound over what you guys can get, you know. And so,
And you know, you guys I can understand this from a filming perspective, so much better with the film to, you know, to be out there during the day, but maybe like behind the scenes secretly, or just, you know, is after dark fishing in your mind something that you think about, like early ice, are those bite windows, you know, even if it's not just for the big fish, like the crappie fishing, right? Like, they eat after dark. Is that sort of thing that you think about this time of year?
I mean, especially with how clear, like this year, our lakes are like especially clear. And so a lot of times when you see that where it's really, really clear water, you got no snow. Like right now we had a full moon during the first ice. So you kind of have a lot of things that are adding to a good night bite. Plus they can't see you. They'll put up with you a little more noise at night because, like I said, they can't see you. They don't know what that noise is. I mean, it's always a good option to do a night bite. We just don't do that because it's hard to film in the dark.
Yeah.
We have a few night bites, you know, that we have done over the time, but it's always more of a hassle trying to do it. And so we kind of just stick to the daytime. And we've always found that the biggest ones we catch are usually in the middle of the day anyway. So
right on, man. Well, I appreciate it, Adam. I love it. And I'm excited for this upcoming season for you guys. It's kind of hard to start with an episode like that and maintain. So I really hope that the success continues for you guys. Either way, I'll be along for the ride, but I appreciate everything that you've touched on, the potential for the bite windows. Be aware of your setup. The cadence really does matter. Be really in tune with your stuff when you're targeting these bigger fish. You know, but the optimism for this season should be at an all-time high for everyone across the board, whether you're looking for giants or not. You know, just because the last couple of years, it's been tough for people to get out, but all that is to make that if you got good ice forming on your own lake, you know, be the first one out there, you know, be on the cutting edge and get out there. Cause this is going to be a great season for it. I think a lot of cool stuff is going to happen for everybody. We'll maybe sign it off with a little bit of just promote yourself or the content where people can find, you know, the videos, or if they ever want to look you up, you're a guide. If anybody wants a guide trip, where can people find you, man?
Okay. One thing I want to talk about real quick is we started a thing called Crappie Chronicled. So you find it at hashtag crappie chronicled. But what you do is you take a picture of the fish on a bump board, take a selfie with it, and then record a video of you releasing it. And it has to be a fish over 14 inches. But we're going to give away a weekly prize for people that do it for the largest one chronicled that week. And then at the end, we're going to do like a grand prize for the overall biggest fish released and chronicled on a video. So
right on.
Yeah, we just want to promote the like release of these fish and keep them in the lake and just show people what we can really have if we let these things go. Because I mean, I feel like this area, that 60-mile range that we drew, is probably some of the best crappie fishing in the country, if not the best, in my opinion. Bart's YouTube channel, we're on season 5. Check out all the other previous seasons. They're pretty good. And hopefully it helps people get out there and catch more crappies and hopefully catch a PB.
Yeah, man. Dude, I appreciate it a ton, Adam.
Oh, you're welcome, man.